Hey, welcome to another episode of the Learn to Code with Me podcast. I'm your host, Laurence Bradford, and today's episode is all about how to code without typing. That's coming up after a quick word from our sponsor. Whether you want to build your portfolio or you're ready to create your first web app, Linode can get you there. Linode is a cloud hosting service that provides virtual servers you can use to get your app, website, or another service online. Their pricing is simple, with no hidden fees, and packages start from just $5 a month. But Linode also has the infrastructure to grow with you as your projects take off. Choose Linode for your next project and support Learn to Code with Me at the same time by going to linode.com/learntocode. You'll get $100 in free credit when you create your account. Can't wait to see what you build. And we're back. In today's episode, I talk with Matt Wietoff. Matt is the co-founder of Serenade, an AI tool that enables programmers to code without typing. Before Serenade, he was a machine learning engineer and tech lead at Quora. The reason why I reached out to Matt is because I really like his story. It's very interesting. While working at Quora, he was diagnosed with something called a severe repetitive stress injury to his wrist, and that left him unable to code. But he didn't give up. Instead, Matt developed a speech-to-code tool that allows people to code without having to type. And that's what we're going to be talking about today. Matt's experience coding with a physical injury, how he created Serenade, and the importance of making coding accessible to everyone. Our conversation touches on how he used Serenade to develop Serenade, the technology behind the tool, and why speaking code may actually be faster and more efficient than using a keyboard. If you want to learn to code but have a physical disability or injury, or you're even just a productivity junkie and are looking for a faster way to code, this episode is for you. Enjoy. Hey, Matt, thank you so much for coming on the show today.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Really excited to talk to you. And just to kick things off, could you tell me where you're located right now?
I'm in downtown San Francisco.
Okay, nice. I'm in the New York City area, actually technically in New Jersey, but I can see the Empire State Building from my window. So still feel like I'm sort of in it, even though kind of removed. But could you just tell me a bit about your journey and how you got into tech?
Yeah. So let's see. I started programming kind of here and there in, you know, a little bit in middle school and some in high school. I had some computer teachers in middle school that would hand me like an HTML book here and there, or there was one time a computer teacher offered to take me out of the standard computer class, and together we sort of tried to figure out C++. So there was, you know, some funny moments there where I remember just like some moments where the two of us were like staring at the section on pointers and trying to figure out, you know, what the heck are these things. So then in high school, I did a little bit more on the engineering side, like robotics competitions, some side projects. At one point, I don't know how I started working on this, but was working on this balancing robot that I saw some guy on the internet make one, and I reached out to him and asked him how he did it, and he was really nice. He gave me all these like instructions on, you know, what hardware I needed to buy, and I think, you know, Christmas that year was a $300 gyroscope or something that was, you know, like a half an inch by half an inch, and people were like, why did you ask for that? But I also had a lot of, for some reason, I think the authors of the chip were sort of these hobbyists that would help me learn C, and just we had these email threads going back and forth. So a lot of these like ad hoc projects and relationships. And then for college, I went to school for engineering. I liked programming a lot. At the time, it wasn't as popular. This was sort of pre-Facebook. I didn't know if that was like a career that I should pursue. So I went more towards the typical engineering route. So majored in electrical engineering. And then by the end of my sophomore year, I realized that, you know, I really loved programming, and that's that's what I'm most passionate about. And all the stuff that the computer science majors were majoring in was really cool. So I ended up switching into computer science officially, like pretty late, did a couple years there. So there's a couple years left in school. And then at the end of my senior year, I took a machine learning class, just like really thought that sort of intersection between probability and algorithms was just thought it was super cool. And so I did an internship with a professor there working on this small social media startup that used machine learning. And yeah, took a job there and then did that for about a year and then joined a company called Quora, where I was working on a bunch of products that, you know, people would use that would use machine learning in the background. So yeah, that's sort of how I, you know, got into the initial job in tech.
Yeah, I love Quora. I was actually on there for a really long time the other day, looking up, this is kind of embarrassing, but looking up stuff with like rashes and bug bites, because I thought we maybe had bed bugs. We don't, just to clarify, we don't. It ended up being a rash from water, which is disgusting, like unclean water that we were swimming in. And I kind of narrowed it down and figured it out through Quora. So what were you doing there exactly? I mean, it sounds like something with machine learning, but like what part of the product were you working on? And also, how long did you work there for?
Yep, so I worked there for around 4.5 years. The first thing I started working on, so I joined their version of news feed. So like, you know, if you go to the Facebook homepage, it's showing articles and stuff that you might be interested in reading. We were using machine learning to predict what answers we thought you'd be interested in reading and what questions we thought you'd be able to answer. That involved a lot of, you may have heard of like the Netflix Prize. There was all sorts of recommendation algorithms that came out of that, you know, this field of recommender systems. There's a bunch of sort of like standard techniques there that I worked on applying. At the start, I was working more on data infrastructure and their experimentation framework. So a lot of machine learning products, you're making a lot of incremental changes to algorithms, and you want to know, be able to measure, like, is this, you know, is this better or worse? And to do that, you need to run an A-B test on like a bunch of users to be able to see, like, make sure you have a big enough sample size and basically do sort of like a small study. So I worked on the framework that let engineers run those, just because the team that I was on was the one that was running the most of them. But then went back to working on the ML algorithms themselves, both the deciding, you know, what algorithm to use, but also all of the infrastructure that goes into that. You know, when you loaded a page on Quora, you know, we're sorting, we're looking at like hundreds of thousands of answers that we might want to show you, and being able to rank those in real time is sort of requires a lot of work with like distributed systems and things like that. So then after that, I was tech lead on a project called Ask to Answer, which was basically when you asked a question on Quora, we would recommend who the best person to ask this question to is. And so it was pretty interesting. It was at this intersection of like, you know, social products and machine learning. And to be able to solve that machine learning problem, you also needed a lot of sort of product insights. So one big product insight was, does our machine learning algorithm actually capture if this person even likes you? You know, if you could, they could be the most relevant person and the expert in the area, but maybe they're just busy. And so being able to factor that in to the algorithm actually made like a really big difference. So I always thought those things were like super, super interesting when you could sort of be at that intersection. And then at the end, I was working on their digest emails. So sort of, you know, predicting whether someone's going to open an article if you send it to them. And then at the end, for a few months, I was tech lead on their ads click-through prediction, right as, you know, Quora started to monetize. So, you know, when you load a question page, we want to predict the probability that you're going to click on a given ad, given, you know, who you are and what the question page is about. And that's sort of used to show like what ad has the highest return on investment from showing it to that user. So I did that for a few months, and that's around the time that I started experiencing wrist pain. And that's sort of how I started looking into this accessibility space.
What was happening with your wrist? Like when you say wrist pain, like what do you mean?
Basically, I'd gone through some periods in the past where just typing for too long would give me some wrist pain. It got to a point where, you know, even like 20 minutes on a computer would be painful. And, you know, in the past, I had seen some, you know, I'd done some of the standard solutions. I'd gone to physical therapy. I'd done all the sort of stretches and things like that. I was sort of known in the office as the guy doing all the stretches, you know, every 30 minutes. So actually a lot of people would come to me and say, oh, you know, I have a similar issue, but, you know, I don't know whether I should bring it up or if I want to go through all the hoops that you have to jump through. And so, you know, in the past, it sort of went away, but this time it just didn't. So I basically couldn't do the job anymore. And that's sort of, I just basically had to leave.
Like when you say you couldn't do the job, you mean like you just couldn't type anymore? Like it was that painful. It was kind of impossible for you to type.
Yeah. I mean, it would be sort of, I'd feel a lot of pain all day in sort of my wrists and my neck. And it got to the point where even just 20 minutes of typing would be too much.
Yeah. Wow. That must have been really difficult. How long ago was this? Like how many years ago or months or whatever?
This was a 2 or 3 years ago.
Okay. Gotcha. Wow. So did you ever figure out like what, or have you figured out what exactly is going on or what is going on?
Yeah. So, I mean, I went to a bunch of doctors. It's actually not a very well, like this, I guess the technical term is repetitive strain injury. And surprisingly, it's not a very well understood area. It's more of sort of a cloud of diagnoses, and there's not a ton of research out there into what exactly each person is having. So I did get some various diagnoses from doctors. I saw, you know, a bunch of the best specialists in the Bay Area. The thing that kept coming back was, you know, the real cause is that you're doing an unnatural act for 40 hours a week. And you know, we didn't evolve to sit at a desk and type for 40 hours a week. It's a surprisingly large amount of pressure that you're putting on very small joints. And so as long as I'm doing the activity, there might be some short-term fixes. You know, the underlying cause is the activity itself. So that's sort of what motivated me to sort of look at alternative input mechanisms, just because I'm really passionate about programming and I want to be doing it for, you know, the next 30 years. And maybe there'll be some solutions that work, but in the long term, it'd be great if you know, this mechanical issue was just not there.
And I just feel like I have to ask this, even though I'm sure like everyone asks you this and it's probably annoying to you at this point, but when you first were having these issues, like, did you think it was, oh my gosh, carpal tunnel? And I'm assuming this must be something different, or is it kind of related?
No, carpal tunnel is one of them. I think my case is, it was maybe a little bit more extreme than other people, but, you know, carpal tunnel, cubital tunnel, tendonitis, these are all sort of within this category of repetitive strain injury. And sometimes it's just sort of diagnosed as RSI. You know, they're not able to sort of narrow down exactly what it is, just because nerve tests and things like that are very coarse grained and more suited for traumatic injuries than they are for some moderate amount of pain or just like a steady amount, just I guess the less extreme cases.
Got it. That was actually another thing I was doing a lot of research on, probably on Quora not too long ago, had to do with like carpal tunnel, pinched nerves, things of that nature. So yeah, I was researching it a lot not too long ago because I was having some of my own like shooting pains in my one arm, but it's starting to go away. Anyhow, that's a different story. Not very relevant to this, but I was wondering because, yeah, I was doing that research. So this makes sense that this led you to create your company, which we'll definitely talk about more in a bit. But like before you even decided to start Serenade, were you researching or looking into other ways to program without typing?
Yeah, there was some solutions out there. A lot of them are based more around Dragon and sort of general dictation. And there wasn't a ton of stuff aimed specifically at programming. You know, when you're programming, you're saying a lot of words that are very unique to programming. And so if you're using one of these general dictation softwares, it's going to struggle in those cases. So you either need to, you might need to find ways to sort of work around it. But I was kind of surprised that there wasn't a ton of stuff out there. It seemed like this was a lot of people were facing this issue. There was a lot of posts on Hacker News about repetitive strain injuries. So yeah, I was pretty surprised that there wasn't more out there for voice.
Right. So a bit ago, you mentioned Dragon. Is Dragon like a product, or is that like a type of, is that like an acronym for something?
Yep. So Dragon is just this general, it's by a company called Nuance, and it's this general dictation software that you might use in like Word or like writing emails. There's a lot of doctors that use it. There's one, they have some for various verticals. So there's one for doctors and there's one for lawyers, but there isn't one for engineers.
Okay, so there's a Dragon program specifically for lawyers or specifically for doctors. So like if I was a doctor, I would purchase the one for doctors, not the one for lawyers.
Yep, or maybe, you know, it would be bought by the hospital that you're working at or something like that for, you know, taking medical transcriptions and things like that.
Got it. Okay. Yeah, this is a whole new world for me. I actually have and still sometimes use a lot of dictation myself on my phone. Mm-hmm. I do, talk to text, you know, whether it's an email or a long text message or something. And sometimes even on my computer, like in Gmail, I have this little, I think it's just like a Chrome plugin or extension, what have you. Yep. And I'll sometimes verbally dictate emails, but I really haven't done much like beyond that or like a free available software. But would something like Dragon, is that quite expensive, like for a regular person to use on their own without a company?
Yeah, I think it's around 500, and there's a new version that comes out every year.
Yeah, so one time 500, not like 500 a month.
Right. Effectively like 500 a year, because there's just new, you don't have to buy a new version, but you know, the new versions are generally more accurate.
Got it. Okay. Well, we're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, we'll talk more about Serenade, the company that you founded. Whether you're just starting to tinker with code or you already have several projects under your belt, Linode is a great place to host your websites and apps. In fact, with Linode, you can do way more than just that. You can set up your own VPN, run an online store, build a game server. There are so many possibilities. You can fully customize your Linode server yourself, or if you want to make things super easy, you can use one of their one-click apps to deploy a pre-built setup in seconds. They've got apps for WordPress, Minecraft, GitLab, and loads more. If you ever get stuck, Linode's customer service team is on hand 24/7, 365 days a year, over the phone and online. In fact, they've won a whole bunch of awards for their customer service, so you know you're going to be in good hands. I highly recommend using Linode for your next project. And you can actually get $100 in free credit when you create a new account with them. Just go to linode.com/learn-to-code and click the Create Free Account button to get started. Okay, great. And we're back. Actually, before we talk more about Serenade, there's something else that I wanted to ask. And I'm trying to word this correctly. I don't know if this is going to make sense, but obviously you went through like most of your life without having this kind of repetitive wrist injury. And then you got this a few years ago. When you like first got it and you were doing this research and trying to come up with solutions and just experiencing this difficulty, what was something that really stood out to you or something that you learned that you maybe never thought about before when your wrists felt like healthy, when you could, you know, easily type?
I mean, I think there's just taking it for granted is one thing. It's, you know, when your wrists are in pain, there's just so many things that you can't do. It's not just work. So yeah, I think I didn't expect the extent to which it would affect basically everything. You know, maybe like not just working, but you know, exercising and staying healthy or just being in pain generally, is especially chronic pain is kind of strange because no one can see it. So it can be kind of lonely sometimes, just because no one knows that you're sort of dealing with that that thing. So
that makes a lot of sense. So transitioning now into Serenade, I feel like it's pretty obvious what led you to start working on this, but could you just explain how the idea started, how you began working on it, and what you guys do exactly?
Yep. So after I left, my friend Tommy, who also worked at Quora, you know, we had sort of started brainstorming ideas and how we might be able to use voice. There was a long period of time where, you know, I still couldn't type, so that tried, you know, finding people to type for me off of Craigslist and doing all these things that I could, you know, contribute to, you know, an initial version of this software. For a while, actually, Tommy's partner typed for me for like 6 months, just every day after work, which was, it was kind of interesting because she was also learning computer science. So it was a way that, you know, she could learn a lot of like the hotkeys that you use in Vim and things like that. But so we worked on it for about 6 months, just getting some initial version. It was just using the Google Speech API. We were really trying to get a sense for, is it even possible to code with voice? And so we got a prototype out. It worked surprisingly well. We also spent some time going through all of the code reviews or the commits that we had written and seeing like, okay, like what is like a set of 50 commands that, you know, if you had these 50 voice commands, you know, you could write all of the diffs that you've written in the past few months. So we did that too. And sort of at that point, just basically spent the next year or so building the platform and the infrastructure to be able to implement those commands. So it started off where we got this initial version out. I could use the software to write itself basically. And at the start, it was easy for me to understand how the system worked, but it required a lot more advanced machine learning and things like that to make the system really simple for other people to use it. So there was a period of time for about a year or two where I could use it, but we were just getting it to a point where other people could use it too. And then we also sort of realized that there's voice can be faster. And, you know, even for people without disabilities, you know, you can speak 3 times faster than you can type. We've been using keyboards for such a long time, there's a really big home field advantage to the keyboard. And so we tried to think like, okay, if we were to design the developer experience today, sort of like what that would look like and try to, you know, envision a product that wasn't just trying to fit into a keyboard world, what would things look like if it was just voice? So that also sort of helped us come up with these commands. And so, yeah, that's sort of how we got started. We eventually went on to build out the tech even more. I can talk more about the details there.
Yeah, I actually wanted to circle back to something you said about hiring someone to type for you and what that looked like, because I've never heard of this. I don't think I've ever heard of this before. So you said on Craigslist, so and then someone who you sort of knew, so I guess that wasn't like a stranger, but how did you find someone on Craigslist? Like you posted an ad and would go to them, or you guys would be together and just sit side by side?
Yeah, there was some like coffee shop, you know, coding sessions with strangers there. But yeah, I basically just posted an ad, you know, I'm working on this machine learning project. I can't type. Could be a good opportunity to learn. I can explain what I'm doing as I'm doing it. And it was definitely pretty challenging. And I think it would have been hard to get a stranger to do it. I've heard of some other people that at Quora actually who, you know, they hired a full-time typist for one of the engineers there.
Oh my goodness. I feel like, okay, I'm sorry. I'm just in my head, I'm just having like a flashback or flashes to like sometimes my husband in the past would help me write emails, like difficult emails, like business emails. He's very like business savvy. So I would be like, how should I handle this? Like what's the wording I should use? Cause he's very good at like using specific words. And he would sort of be like telling me what to say. And I would be typing and I would just get, I was like, here, just take my laptop, just draft it out. I'll look at it then. Because it is hard when he's like, no, change that. Actually go back, change that word. It would be so frustrating. So I'm just thinking of the person who full-time a typist for them. I mean, I would imagine they'd be very close and get along. I hope get along well, because they would be together like 24/7 during work, or not 24/7, but during work.
Yeah, it's definitely really tough. And they, they need to know all the programming stuff. They need to know like how to use an IDE and all this stuff. So there's a pretty high bar there. And I don't know if it's really worked for anyone. I think it was more a testament to the person that eventually was doing it that she, you know, was willing to put up with me for that long. But yeah, it's really hard. And I think even when I think people are pair programming, it's good to have sort of like this established like lingo for like how you're going to communicate things. You know, an analogy is like air traffic controllers. There's a very strict grammar for what they're allowed to say, so that they're saying it in the most efficient way. And there's some parallels there, I guess, to coding with voice, learning how to express yourself very succinctly, and coming up with conventions is definitely a huge part. So there'll be times when I'll be pair programming with my co-founder Tommy, and I'll want him to type something, and I'll just give him the serenade commands, you know, verbally to him, and then he'll know how to like, you know, type that in. So, you know, things around like parentheses and like, how do you, you know?
Yeah. So what's an example of some of these commands? Like you've mentioned these a couple of times, like the serenade commands, and how it can allow you to like dictate, or is that the word that you use, dictate, or do you use a different one?
I think dictate's a good one. Yeah.
Yeah. So when you're coding aloud or dictating, you have these commands. Yeah. What are some examples of those?
Yeah. So we tried to make them, you know, natural English. So if you wanted to create a function called factorial, you would say add function factorial. And regardless of the programming language that you're in, it would know how to do the syntax and write that all out for you. It would know where to put the cursor if your cursor is not in the exact right position. And then if you wanted to add a parameter called number, you could just say add parameter number. If you want to say add an if condition, you could say something like add if number equals zero, return one. And so you're still sort of dictating some of the code, but you're not dictating all of it.
Okay. And then a person, or this would be running on top of the command line or a text editor or an IDE. It can kind of be used anywhere. Is that right?
Yep. So we started off just focused on code and supporting those commands that we thought that was sort of maybe like the killer feature, was that you could do programming language specific things. But we've now moved to sort of allowing you to use any app with Serenade, because you know, when a developer's at work, they're doing a lot more than just writing code. They're opening Slack, and they're messaging their coworker, and they're going to GitHub, and they're opening a pull request, and they're, you know, responding to a pull request. They're going to the terminal. So basically the way it works is there's the Serenade app, which runs sort of hovering on top of your screen, and it'll show you what you're saying and things like that, and have all sorts of menus. But then it'll integrate with other applications. So we have official support for things like Chrome. We have a terminal app integrations. We integrate with VS Code, all of the JetBrains IDEs. Then we also have this open protocol that if you are using an editor that we don't have support for, you can sort of plug into that with this this REST API. And so basically what's happening is the application spins up this WebSocket, and it connects to other applications that are whatever's in focus to be able to send it forward, the commands there. For example, the VS Code plugin will receive something from Serenade saying, okay, change the source code to this, or switch to the next tab. But you know, if you're in another application, you can receive those commands and then apply those operations in whatever other framework that you're in. And then there are a lot of APIs that operating systems expose. So even if you're in an application that isn't directly supported by Serenade, so for example, or doesn't have like some sort of like official support or plugin, something like that, we can still get the contents of like the text field that you have selected. So if you're in Slack, you can type out messages in the text box. If you're, you know, in a bunch of other sort of like Mac applications, they all sort of expose these APIs. And those are used, I think, for things like screen readers and other sort of accessibility applications. Windows has a similar one. And so we're able to hook into those. And then if those APIs are not available, we have some fallbacks for that as well. Basically, we can throw up a canvas that we have total control of, and then we can paste that canvas into whatever text field that you want to be inserting text into.
So does it also work in replacement to like a mouse, or do you still use like a mouse to click between tabs or applications or whatever? Or can you actually say, I don't know, something like switch from Slack to Chrome or whatever?
Yep. So I could say focus Chrome, and that would do that. You could also in Chrome, you can click links like we have. You could say something like, if there's a link on the screen that says, you know, homepage, you could say click homepage. So you can do things like that. If you're in an IDE, you can move the cursor around pretty easily. You can say, you know, go to second function, and it'll put the cursor on the second function. Or you could say go to end of next class, and it'll put the cursor there. And then, you know, if all else fails, you can write a custom command that says, you know, move the cursor to this part of the screen and click down. We also have like a click command that you can sort of, you could move the mouse, and then to actually do the buttons, you could use Serenade.
That's so cool. So Serenade, a person would download to their computer, I'm imagining, right? So it's like something that's actually like, yeah, it's not in the web or whatever. It's on your computer. You have to have microphone access, I would obviously imagine, because you have to talk to it. Is there anything else that a person would need to like run it, or like just like have this installed and whatever?
Nope. We support sort of all three operating systems, and you sort of download Serenade, and it walks you through, you know, what to install and all of that.
Yeah, that's really neat. And I'm wondering, so I guess perhaps not early on, but now that it's actually, you know, working a real product, I'm assuming you use Serenade all the time to build Serenade.
Yep. Yeah. I've been using it for a few years now. I mean, there was that time where it was, you know, no one else could use it, but I could use it. And now I think it's gotten to that point where it's simple enough for other people to use it. So we have a community of people, and, you know, just a Discord channel where people help each other out. And yeah, I've been using it for years now. And I think it's kind of an interesting way of coding. At first, it felt sort of, you know, you would have to write a piece of code, and you'd have to wonder, oh, like, how would I turn this into voice commands? But very quickly, I think it begins to feel like this sort of stream of consciousness, and you're not sort of like, you're just sort of saying things, and you're not hesitating or thinking too much about what you need to say. In the same way that when you're typing something out, it sort of becomes automatic. The same sort of experience is, you get the same sort of experience with coding by voice.
That's really awesome. And the people that are using it, the people in this Discord channel that you mentioned, like, who are they? I know that's like a very broad question. I'm sure they vary, mm-hmm. but are they also people with different kinds of injuries where they can't type or have other, I don't know, something that makes it much more convenient for them to, you know, speak aloud? Yeah. Like, who are they?
It's a full spectrum. There's people who are, you know, trying to learn coding because they had some injury at their work and have figured out that Serenade's a way that they can become a developer. There's like people with a ton of experience who have maybe had some sort of injury. So they're using it too. It spans like the different roles. We have people doing front end, people doing more sysadmin stuff, people doing back end work. And yeah, in terms of sort of the disabilities, I think it ranges. There's people who want to do it in a preventative way. You know, people who are not, don't have it as extreme as me. But, you know, when we were looking at these statistics around repetitive strain injuries, something like the number we kept hearing was something around 10 to 20% of people typing 8 hours a day at a computer are going to experience some sort of symptom. So there's a lot of that. And then there's also people who are just more like productivity junkies who, you know, when you're using voice, it becomes really easy to basically memorize hotkeys, because instead of developing the muscle memory to for some special action, you just have to remember what the action is, what it's called. And so it becomes really easy to add a lot of different macros or custom commands, because just voice is just this really easy way to index into this library. And then of course there's people who are, you know, have much more serious injuries who could maybe have never used their hands and things like that.
Yeah, that's really neat. And it sounds like something you said before, I think it was, you can talk 3 times faster than you type. So once you have these commands memorized and you're comfortable, like, you know, using it, it feels like you could work a lot faster just from talking aloud.
Yeah. I mean, there's definitely some things that are much faster with voice. There's still some things that, you know, we're working on where keyboard's much faster, but we're slowly sort of crossing off that list. But yeah, that's sort of been our experience. It's really easy to write like really long lines of codes or do these complicated refactors with voice versus typing them out.
Gotcha. So we don't have a ton of time left, but I really wanted to talk a bit more just about accessibility as a whole. And I was wondering, like, from your experiences and I'm assuming becoming more familiar yourself with different kinds of accessibility situations and issues and all of that, are there any resources? So like books, courses, websites, or anything like that, that a person listening could check out if they just want to learn more about the field of accessibility in general?
Yeah, I think one of the things that we noticed is that everything is sort of ad hoc right now. Companies are definitely paying a lot more attention to accessibility right now. So that's great. So you'll see Apple was constantly releasing new updates that are making some of these voice things a lot better, especially in the past year, and making things on your phone really easy. But that was also sort of one of these goals that we wanted to create with our community, was there is a place for people to go, just because it does seem like that things are pretty random right now and fragmented.
Got it. So are there any, and again, I know this maybe isn't like your exact area of expertise, but from what you've seen so far working on this for a few years and yet being in this space, are there any like specific job opportunities for people to work in the realm of accessibility? So like something that's coming to my mind is like at a bigger company, they could have a team that is dedicated to accessibility or like improving the product and making it more accessible. Yeah, so like what kind of stuff is out there, I guess, that's accessibility specific for engineering?
Yeah, I would say almost every big company we've talked to has a department or teams working on accessibility. It might not be voice, but it could be things like screen readers. So we've spoken to people at like Microsoft and Amazon and Apple. They all, if it's a big enough company, they definitely will have teams that are helping people either internally or making their products more accessible to their users.
Okay, great. So just to wrap things up, I was wondering if you just had any final advice or thoughts to leave listeners who are, you know, coding or learning to code, but they may have some kind of physical disability or injury that makes it harder. Like any advice?
I would say that, you know, you're not alone and the tools are getting much better just overall. And I think things are going to head in a way that, you know, if you can kind of stick it out, things are sort of heading in a way where it's not going to feel like a liability, and it could feel kind of like a silver lining or an asset that you know, learning some alternate way of doing things, because it could actually be more efficient.
Awesome. Okay. Well, thank you so much for coming on the show, Matt. Where can people find you online?
So we're at Serenade AI on Twitter, and our website is just serenade.ai.
Okay, perfect. We'll make sure to include that in the show notes and other things that we talked about in this interview. Thank you again for coming on.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
I hope you enjoyed today's episode. If you missed anything or would like a recap, you can find the show notes at learntocodewith.me/podcast. If you're listening to this episode in the future, simply click the search icon in the upper navigation of the website and search for the guest name. If you enjoyed this episode, you can subscribe to my show on whichever podcast player you use. For more free tech-related resources, tips, and recommendations, visit the website and blog over at learntocodewith.me. Thanks so much for tuning in, and I'll see you next time.